This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided with the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help, seek out a qualified medical services provider or other healthcare professional. Welcome to the Live Your Yoga Podcast, a podcast dedicated to discovering and sharing all the ways in which yoga can be lived off the mat. Real stories by real people, just like you.
Welcome to the Live Your Yoga Podcast, where we explore the profound ways in which yoga intersects with every aspect of our lives. In today's special episode, we're diving into a topic that is near and dear to many of our hearts: the invaluable lessons our furry friends teach us both on and off the yoga mat. That's right, we're talking about our beloved dogs as our greatest teachers. Whether you're a seasoned yogi or just starting out on your journey, you might discover that your pets can have a remarkable impact on enriching, inspiring, and guiding your understanding of the practice of yoga. So join us as we delve into the wisdom of our four-legged friends, exploring how their innate qualities of presence, mindfulness, and unconditional love can profoundly influence our approach to yoga and life itself. For today's episode, we are joined by Sala and her dog Bass, Mark and his dog Diego, and myself and my pup Luna. So grab your mat, cuddle up with your pup or any pet for that matter, and get ready to embark on a journey of self-discovery and transformation as we uncover the profound lessons our dogs have to teach us. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
So perhaps we can start by just introducing our dogs. We already know each other and everybody knows us. So maybe we could just start by telling our listeners the type of dog we have and how old they are and maybe a little funny quirk or habit or personality trait they have. Do you want to go first, Sala?
Yeah, sure. But actually, I will actually ask if Mark can go first, because Diego's like the granddaddy of the dogs. Oh. And I just feel like, Diego, let's go.
Chronological order. Yes.
Yeah, seniority.
So my dog is Diego. He's 14 and a half years old. We've had him since I think he was about 6 weeks. And he is a Yorkie crossed with a New Zealand heading dog, which is a very weird type of cattle dog from New Zealand that is bred to specifically run head on at cattle and not from behind, like a lot of cattle dogs herd from behind. A heading dog herds from the front because they have zero fear. And so as you can imagine, it comes with a lot of personality quirks. That's kind of strong-headed herding personality, and then the lapdog Yorkie. But I would say his biggest quirk, what's Diego's biggest quirk? His biggest quirk, he has so many, and he's getting more as he ages, so it's really difficult. What's his biggest quirk? I don't know. There's so many. Oh, he knows the time. He knows when 5 a.m. hits and he needs a pill. He knows when 1 p.m. hits. He knows when it's 9 p.m. He has a routine. And if we deviate from that routine by a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, an hour, he's just distraught. So he's a good timekeeper.
He keeps you punctual.
100%. Yes.
Love that.
And then who's next, Sala, chronologically?
How old is Baz, Sala?
Baz will be, he's about 2.5 now.
Oh, okay. So actually Luna's next, because she's going to be 3 in April. She's getting old. My baby. So Luna is a miniature short-haired Dachshund. She's chocolate and tan, and we got her as a puppy. She was 13 weeks old, and she's been with us ever since. And Dash Hounds are known to be very spunky. They have a lot of personality for very short legs. She's a true lap dog, loves to be warm at all times, so lives most of the day in a blanket or by a space heater. And they have a very sharp bark, which she definitely has that trait. What can I tell you that's funny about her? I mean, she's just truly hilarious all the time. We're constantly laughing at her. One of her funniest traits is probably finding like the only bit of, whether there's a sun patch in the house or like the last slither of sun on the deck, that's where she'll be. She'll manage to like mold and contort herself so that her whole body is just in that frame of sunshine, wherever it is in the house. And when there's no sun, she's at the space heater. She's ruled by warmth. She'd do really well in Colombia. She'd be a great Colombian dog. So yeah, that's Luna.
I love Luna. I love that she appears in the videos.
Yeah, she's definitely, I could, in the beginning when she was younger, I tried, but it was just a disaster because she was a puppy and she just wanted to eat the blocks and, you know, play. But now she's kind of mellowed out. She's able to be on camera or just slightly off camera and not disturb. Because I'm conscious I don't want her to be a distraction. You know, I just want her to kind of meander in if she wants to and wander off if she wants to. So it's lovely now that she gets to be with me and I don't have to like have her in a separate room while I'm in the house doing yoga in another room. Like that didn't feel good to me. So yeah, it's nice now. She's a little... one of the little YYF mascots, like Diego. Diego's been a mascot for a long time. So now Luna's learning the ropes.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
And I wish I could have Baz as a mascot, but he is absolutely not there yet. Because if I'm practicing with any sort of textile, like a blanket or even blocks, his eye is on it and it's gone. So we're not there yet. But my dog is Baz, B-A-Z. We rehomed him about 8 months ago from a shooting kennel. We're up in the north of Scotland, so there's a lot of estates that still enjoy going out and doing all sorts of shooting practices. He is a pointer cross Labrador, and he was at an English pointer kennel, and this was going to be an experimental breed for them to see if the retriever in the Labrador and the pointer together would create something interesting for people wanting to work these dogs. And it was a duff. The two pups that came from this litter to that kennel, both do not like working. They prefer the sofa lifestyle. And I say them because next month we're actually going to be taking on his sister too. So we will have two pointer cross labs. Baz is a red color, so everyone thinks he's a fox red lab. I think that's what they're called. And they get very excited about that, but he's not. He's actually, he would be described as lemon and white. He has a white chest and lemon would be the color of that type of pointer. So his funniest quirk, or I said he's about 2.5, so we've had him 8 months. His funniest quirk is because he did live in a gun dog kennel, and they were very nice and they had like an insulated bedroom and everything. He never had any textiles in his life. So he is socks gone. He doesn't eat them, but he just loves to rip them apart. So I've had to buy many new socks for myself, and he keeps me accountable for putting away my laundry. Cause if I leave it out, that's another pair of socks done, gone, holes, can't wear them. So we let him have that love because he didn't have anything soft like that before. And so even though some people might think that's really difficult to live with, me and my husband think it's really cute and we just want to give him all the soft things. So that's Baz.
Love that story and love that you're getting his sister. I didn't know that.
Yeah, her name is Tess and she is black and white. So we almost have a little yin yang situation with the dogs.
And is Tess still at the kennel or is she somewhere else now?
Okay. Yeah, she is at that kennel. So that's proof that that line of pups did not do what this kennel wanted them to do. Right. Yeah. We don't mind because we're quite happy with having them here.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to have the best life together. Oh, that reunion will be so sweet.
Yeah, we went up so that they could meet again. And we didn't know what to expect because some littermates, they don't get on long term. It can be the way. But they just looked at each other and then looked at us like, yeah, we know each other. What's the big deal? Mm. It was just very relaxed. And that was great.
Yeah.
I assured Baz that he will remain my right-hand man because he's very much my dog. She's very affectionate, Tess. So he's going to be helping me settle her in. So he's my right-hand man. She's going to be my good time gal. That's what I'm saying.
I love that. That's gorgeous. Keeping the pack together.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that our dogs exhibit so many beautiful qualities. We could go on and on and on. They show us unconditional love and loyalty and forgiveness. So how do you believe that these traits make them exceptional teachers for humans?
When you listed those qualities, Joe, it made me think how lots of so like the quality of forgiveness or the unconditional love, these kind of things, sometimes in our lives, they are concepts. And we might not all, even in the relation, you know, the close relationships we have with people, sometimes they can be fraught with things that might get in the way of really seeing that. But I think with a dog, at least in my case, or I'm sure for many people, an animal of some kind, a companion animal, it's an embodiment of that. And it becomes for me, at least, a daily reminder of seeing that. So, you know, you might practice loving kindness meditation every day, but that step of sort of really seeing it physically embodied is challenging. So I think for me, seeing those types of qualities in a living, breathing form without any of the complications that can be there with other human relationships is really why I think they're great teachers, or at least in my case, Diego has been a good teacher for me.
Oh, that was so well worded. Yeah, no, really. That was like spot on. I don't think I could say it any better than that.
Oh, you could.
A living, breathing embodiment of those beautiful qualities that we have, we house as humans, but like you said, we don't always know how to express them or communicate them, or they get suppressed with other things that we're dealing with. And so having your pet around as that reference point that lives in your home and is that constant reminder is just like, what a gift, you know, to see that embodiment walking around on four legs in your home. I just repeated what you said in a different way. It was beautiful.
I love that. I love when that happens. But I think the uncomplicatedness of it too. And I think, you know, you could have an animal your whole life and never really see their value as a teacher for you, which I think is one of the great things that a yoga, a mindfulness, a contemplative practice brings to your life is to see what could be regarded as the everyday things, like having a companion animal, and to be able to add further layers to that relationship so that that companion animal really becomes your teacher, not in a passive way where you never, like I had rabbits as a kid. I'm sure they were wonderful and I love them, but I don't know it that as a child I learned that much about forgiveness or unconditional love or these kind of things from rabbits, from my rabbits, at least in my case. But now as an adult who is more interested in those types of practices, I can look at a companion animal and see a whole other dimension of what they bring, or this particular one brings to my life.
Oh, I feel like there's going to be a moment where we're just going to cry at one point. I can feel it already. And maybe people listening will also be like, yeah, it's going to be a very heartfelt episode. I loved hearing that's what you observe with Diego. That's so special. And I think the observance for me is the really interesting thing, that this time around, rehoming Baz, it meant that we never met him as a baby or saw him grow in his different personalities as he developed. We had to meet him and just trust that who we met there, we were going to have a lovely life with him. And of course, as he settled, he was going to change, be more comfortable as he got used to living in a town and in a house and all the new things he hadn't done before. But for me, I think Baz's thing that he's taught me the most is probably around staying open to trusting everything's going to be fine. And as long as I'm observing him and what he needs and listening in to who he is, actually more interestingly. So it was really obvious that I can only interpret it with the language I know, but he's quite a wind element dog. So if he's nervous, he needs to move and he needs to move fast. And that could be the pointer in him. But we were told to maybe introduce a crate into the house because that's what he was used to in the kennel to help with that transition. And immediately I could just see that it was, yes, there was a crate, which was familiar looking, but the environment was far too different. There just really wasn't much of a connection there for him. And I could see this wind energy in him coming up. So he's taught me to be really observant to everybody's individual makeup about like who they are and yeah, just who they are at their heart center. And so I love that about him. He's taught me to observe the world in a different way than I did before. And to then listen, have the information and respond with what I think he needs so he'll be comfortable. And then I do that now just in life more. So I think that's the biggest way he's been my biggest teacher so far.
Beautiful.
I'll keep it short. Yeah.
What I want to say about what you've just said, Salah, and your awareness around looking and listening at your pet for those signs and signals is similar to what Mark said, that you also have to be in a place in your human experience to be able to witness and receive that from an animal. And so, like we said, when we were younger, because I too grew up with smaller like rodent animals growing up, and they were like cute and cuddly, but like I wasn't looking for deeper meaning from these animals. They were my pets. But now as an adult, I feel like this experience with this pet is so much richer and fuller because I am in a place of more awareness and more openness and more consciousness, more present moment awareness, that this relationship now I'm having with this pet is so much deeper and thought provoking. And I'm learning so much more in this experience, in this moment, that I don't think I could have had 10 years ago, even with a pet. So I think this conversation we're having about the way we are interacting with our animals is it's not just about the animal, because these animals are just innately like this. They have this wisdom and knowing, and they, like Mark said, they embody these qualities. It's whether we as humans in our experience are able and willing to see it and receive it. So I think clearly the three of us on our yoga path and this journey that we're on has maybe given us more opportunity to have this richer relationship with our dogs, is kind of what I believe at this point. So moving on from that, you kind of touched on it already, Sala, but it would be lovely to hear, if you are open to it, a personal experience where your dog has taught you a valuable lesson or provided you some unexpected insight into life.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to share. Please get your tissues.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So Mark will have met Bam, who was our beloved St. Bernard crossed with a Newfoundland. And it will be, we're calling it his soul departure day. It will be his soul departure day on March 10th. So we are approaching that with this podcast episode. But the thing that Baz helped me with very early on as an experience coming into our lives was that after having had an elderly dog with some trickier health conditions towards the end that we had to be on very high alert for, I actually noticed as a pet owner, I became very reactive to, and rightly so, because it was, we needed to be on high alert because he could potentially die in that moment, sort of thing. So when Baz first came, there was a lot of things he would do, like he would just do a little clearing of his throat or something that would remind us of what Bam, our other dog, was struggling in the last few days before he passed. And I noticed in myself, I became very untrusting that it was almost like I'd forgotten that Baz was only 2.5. And I was right back with an old dog and he couldn't do it on his own and I needed to be there for him. And so I'd lost all perspective, I suppose, of the individual Baz was. I was really carrying Bam's story into Baz's existence with us in the first couple of months in our house. And it was really, really hard to keep remembering that Baz was only 2.5 and a very healthy dog. And not just that, an athlete of a dog. I mean, he scales cliffs like I've never seen. And when we were, because we were gifted Baz, we were helping out this kennel to rehome him. She did say to me, be careful with this one. He doesn't make the best of choices, but he makes through. But you might have to hold your breath for a minute as he makes these interesting decisions of where he's going to jump off and what he's going to tear down and what he's going to try and cross. And I was like, okay. So my biggest experience with Baz was just this. There were these moments where I would see him for exactly who he is, which was this wild child, but an athlete, and he could do it. Whatever he wanted to do, he could do it. If he wanted to go up that mountain, he could do it. And I just had to, I felt myself almost step out of my body and be like, Sala, he can do this. He's a healthy young dog. So it was that trust. I had to like retrust that, yeah, like let go of Bam. You don't have an old dog anymore that you need to be on high alert for. Baz is this vibrant, sunshiny, wild child of a thing, and he is having the best time up that hill right now. And yes, he's probably going to try and jump that thing, but he can do it because he's an athlete. And if he can't, you will be there because that's who you were for Bam when he needed you during his last few days. So it was that like trusting that I'll be there when I need to be, but I really had to start letting go and making space for this beautiful soul that I was building a relationship with. So for me, the word was trust. Stepping back into the world, it's okay. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, you've gone from like, you know, being a caretaker, a nurturer, a provider, a support system for your elderly dog, and to then, you know, transition to being in a space with a energetic, healthy, vibrant pup. Like, that's a huge gap. And to, yeah, you know, to kind of reinstate that at that level of trust within yourself that your new dog is okay took a little bit of retraining, I guess, because you had become so accustomed to looking after a poorly dog in its last few days. So I totally see that.
Yeah.
And what a gift, what a lesson.
Yeah. I also wonder if it would have been an easier transition, because caring for an elderly individual and caring for a newborn are somewhat similar in what's needed from the caregiver. Different types of care, obviously, but that same love and unconditional attention. So I think because we skipped the puppy part with Baz and we were just gifted, like you said, this vibrant, well-established little person in a dog's body, you know, we didn't have that time to tailor the nurturing. We just had to release it and go, he's fine. Yeah. So it was quite a transition, but a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next, let's hear some more wonderful stories.
Joe, go.
Okay. Well, the one that came to mind for me was quite a simple teaching, but really important one for my central nervous system, I believe. So what I've realized, because this is the first time me and my partner have owned a dog together. I had a dog growing up, but you know, I had zero responsibility for that dog. I just used to ride it around the house like it was my pony. but with this dog, she's very much my responsibility. And so what I have loved is the way that carving out routine has become so integral and so important for keeping her steady and calm, because she can be quite like an anxious breed in general. So if there's not that stability in routine, it can throw her. And I see it all the time when we go on trips. She kind of becomes a bit of a different dog than when we're at home and we're in our steadiness. And so integrating more established routines, like Mark was saying earlier, you know, set times for meals, kind of set rough times for when we go for our walk. She kind of knows now the ins and outs of the flow of the week. That has also reestablished it in my life, because I'm also can be quite like a little bit erratic and like fly by the seat of my pants sometimes. And like, I'm flow with the wind. I'm a Vata type personality. So I can be doing one thing and then into the other thing quite quickly. And so she's just that constant reminder that keeping within the routine and the steadiness of the day, the structure of the day, is not just helpful for her, but also really helps me stay steady and grounded too. So that's been one of many beautiful lessons.
That's an important one too. Yeah. And learning those things about yourself through another being.
Right.
Yeah. Mine is similar in some ways to Sala's, because it has been a very different experience having an old geriatric dog with numerous health conditions. If I can show you Diego now, I don't know if you'll be able to see him, but he had to go to the vet yesterday and he's currently, where are you? He got shaved in all these places where he has like this awful infection. It was just, but you know, like you have an older dog and it seems like every year for the last 4 years, he has a big health crisis. And then, you know, he usually recovers. But this last, not that long, well, a year, almost a year ago, I think last April, or maybe it was May, he was deathly ill, hospitalized. And I remember sitting in a restaurant with Juan and we had that conversation that you have to sometimes have at some point and how difficult that was and all the things that brought up. And then the vet telling us you know, okay, I'm glad like you went and you talked and you kind of settled something in your heart, but I have a feeling you should give him, like, we're going to give him a little bit more time. And then, you know, he rebounds, he's happy as Larry, he somehow pushes, comes through. So I guess about the two, it's like this twofold teaching. One is about resiliency and trust in that. And then the other is that each time it's happened over the last few years, or each time he has something, it's this awful but beautiful reminder that of the preciousness of time and how fleeting it is. And you know, when you're a child, or I guess even in your 20s, for me at least, it was really difficult to imagine my life without certain people. And then when you are gifted with the cohabitation of another being, from that very moment, there's an understanding that that time will be fairly short in comparison to your lifespan. So that kind of, I don't know, it's like that kind of teaching that I don't think that we often hopefully experience in that short amount of time is, it's difficult for me to kind of put into words, but it's like the teaching in that lately, because he is 14 and a half and there is a very, very small amount of time that he just will have left on this plane. So being confronted with that every day, and I say confronted not because it's a negative thing, but just realizing it sometimes daily, sometimes weekly, is kind of a pretty profound teaching.
Right. Like time is precious, and be present to the experience you're having with him today. Like, is that?
Yeah, kind of exactly. Like, for example, yeah, like if I'm doing yoga, he loves a yoga mat, and he gets very interested in what it is I'm doing. And he's seen us do yoga most of his life. So it's not special to him, but over the last few years, whereas previously I would have just kept practicing and sort of just got on with it and moved around him and stepped over him, or, you know, moved off the mat because he's now taken up my whole mat. I'll just stop what I'm doing. And my practice is just being with him because he wants to be near me. So instead of doing what I want to do while he's near me and making a conscious choice to give him time, and that's, you know, and something like this morning, I was like, I'm going to do a half hour practice. Great. So I put my mat on my balcony, started practicing. After about 15 minutes, Diego comes wandering out there, super interested. And so I just stopped and sat with him. I petted him. Eventually I lay down and he sort of just chilled out and lay down next to me. And I think the old me would have maybe thought like, well, I still need to do those 15 minutes. But I was like, this is the practice today, is he wants some connection. So yeah.
Yeah. The connection becomes louder, doesn't it? As they grow older, it's so much more obvious, I found. And the good nights and the good mornings are like mm-hmm. a ceremony in themselves, I found too. Yeah. It's a special time these times. Obviously, there's the confrontation every day that you spoke about. That's very real, but like so special, these goldie oldie days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I say goodnight to him every night and thank you, because I don't know.
Right. Exactly. Having to be okay with what might and what may not. Yeah.
Yeah. And just and the lovely surprise of how strong they really are, you know. And I think back to, when you were talking about Baz, I was thinking back to when Diego was about that age and just how crazy he was and how energetic he was. And so over the last couple of years, we say he's retired from being an active dog participant into a retiree in the dog world, and also like the adjusting our behavior around him. Cause I love to walk him, and I think that's a really important part of a day, like exercise and things like that. But I've slowly been adjusting my expectations for him and myself as to sometimes, like this morning, we went outside and we literally walked 10 steps and then he put on the brakes. And I thought, okay, you know better than me. Let's head back inside. So it's just, yeah. So at least for me, like the teachings are just, I think they're, when I reflect on them, they're too numerous to really, I don't even think in this lifetime I'll be able to really understand all of them, because they're so many and they're so profound that maybe with other lifetimes, I'll figure it out. I don't know. We'll see.
Thank you for sharing, both of you. Those were so powerful. Maybe we can move on to a conversation around empathy and communication and connection. So these words come to mind when we think about our dogs, when we observe them, when we interact with them. It deepens our understanding of connection. We've just spoke about that a lot. How do you think that relationship or that embodiment of those things that we have with our pet then helps us to have those same connections with other humans, or does it?
Do you want to go first on this one, Joe? Because I'm interested, because little saucisson doggies, they come in many different styles, don't they? I'm interested to hear about what you've learned with that.
Yeah. So when we first got Luna, we weren't even sure if we could really have her long term, which was probably a little irresponsible at the time. But it's all worked out now, because my partner has allergies. And so we'd already done a test run with a dachshund in their home. We'd stayed in their house and like dog sat for a few nights to kind of see if he was okay with this short hair. And that was fine. So we were like, okay, let's do this. And in the beginning with Luna, he was okay, but he would sometimes get like hives on his forearms if she was too excited, and he couldn't have her licking him anywhere because that would bring him out in hives. Also, he's never had a dog before, ever. Like, this was very much me that wanted to go ahead with this. But what I have adored watching is the two of them and how they have like grown this relationship, that now they are like completely inseparable, and Luna could lick and kiss him all over his face and up his nose and his eyes, and he has like zero reaction anymore. And together they've built this like, this beautiful, like truly intertwined bond that I don't think he could have with another dog because of his allergies, but they've made this, I don't know, this pact or decision together that like we're going to be okay. So having witnessed that and watched that, it has just, one, it was a relief. Two, it's made me fall more in love with my partner to see him, looking after and caring for this teeny tiny little 12 pounds of sausage. I think as a threesome now, our little pack, it's infused more love into like our relationship with each other, and like the household in general feels more full of love and sweetness. And then I've heard that like people who come over, they say they feel that in our home, which is just amazing. She's really kind of been a huge addition to what we already had created together. And so now, like, you know, I hope that continues on. And like, I was thinking about maybe when she's a bit older, I would love for her to come with me to like the senior homes or something and help, you know, be a, like a, I don't know if it's like emotional support or a therapy pet, because I know that lap dog and petting is really healing or supportive for that population. So that's something I've kind of considered longer term, because I'm like, man, the amount that she's brought to us in our relationship, I feel like she's got the gift of it and could spread it a little further maybe over time and offer more connection to people who are feeling maybe lonely or yeah. So that's me.
It's so cute. And dogs are always such a good judge of character of who needs love. I noticed they just know, and they can be the most unassuming individuals of all ages, actually. Yeah, so I can relate to that part. Also, when I watch Luna on screen, because I haven't had the privilege of meeting her in person yet, I see that in her. She's so full of sweetness and love, like this little bean, but a massive loving one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she might even enjoy that. You'll have to see how she goes. She'll tell you, of course, if she doesn't.
Yeah. I think there's a way off yet. Cause like I said, she's great in our environment, but like taking her places that she doesn't know. And like, that would have to come with time, I think. But yeah, she loves people. She loves human connection and contact. So yeah, one day.
Oh, that's nice. May I go on this one?
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty short, this exploring this theme with you on this topic of empathy and compassion and love. It's probably me as an owner, because for me to have multiple dogs with the same reactions to certain things must be that I'm giving off something, because I think it's impossible to have like four dogs the same. I don't think, and all different breeds, I just don't think it's possible. So it must be something I'm feeling that they're picking up on, which is why they're acting this way. But my dogs have always been very careful around new people, and they communicate very strongly to me about what they think about them. And it can be quite humorous. One time, Bam, our very big boy that passed, he almost rolled his eyes at me towards someone, like, please, no, mama, not today, not this one, not today. And because he was so huge and looked like a big teddy bear, everybody wanted to say hello. We quickly learned we had to give him the choice. So we would always say, thank you for asking. I'm going to ask Bam if he would like to. And then Bam would let us know in his language if he wanted to or not. So the compassion bit came in because we had to get very good at being able to kindly say to these people in a way they'd understand, because they could have had the worst day and he was the most amazing thing they've ever seen. And maybe they'd watched Beethoven only about this type of breed and thought he was going to be this beautiful, full of love thing. But they don't know that Bam had maybe 20 people on just that walk also try and do the same thing. So we'd have to often create space to maybe recognize if that person wanted to have a conversation with us about Bam without touching him. Because if he'd said no, we needed to respect that. And then, of course, there were just some really wild characters where Bam would be like, absolutely not, is this happening? And we're leaving now. And he would, you know, take off in the other direction. And there'd be me going, bye, thanks, have a great day, bye, trying to be compassionate. But Baz, the dog now, he's the same. He's very careful around, the two are the same. They're very careful around people that may have substances in their system that these individuals may be using to cope with life. They are like sniffer dogs for that. And immediately they are like, mama, stay clear, stay clear. They're very, and like, I can sense it too, but I can also sense, because I'm another human, rather than, it's not a dog, it's a human, I can read human. you know, I'm able to say like if it's okay or not, but I would never force them to have an interaction with someone they didn't want to be with. But then comes that compassion for the other person in a way that they're not going to be. Yeah. And it was the elderly people that we loved the most. And sometimes if they had a lot of, specific medications to do with pain in their system, maybe quite high doses, for all sorts of whatevers. My dogs don't like that at all. But so they have a bit of a distance. They sit like behind me, and then I will have a conversation with this elderly person. Cause just cause they're being treated for pain doesn't mean that they're a threat. And so I don't know why my dogs are like that. All of them have been. But yeah, I've had to learn how to bridge that gap between what's actually a threat and what's giving them space. And then me, not people pleasing, but just being aware of that other person and responding in a way that's appropriate. And then if I know that they would love a chat, if they're an elderly person, I'm happy to do that. Whilst my dog looks like a real grump behind me, like, ugh, mom. Yeah. So a heartfelt but comedic answer.
It's funny. I like that. It's you know, what's interesting is lots of people who maybe don't have dogs or maybe do, there's that idea of we can train to change, you know, train your dog and it will be fine meeting people. Like you can train it to do things, and similar to your experiences, Diego has a very selective hat. Now he's senile and a little bit blind. He thinks he knows everybody and he's happy to meet everybody. But pre when he could see and his brain worked a little bit better, he was very discerning and he did not like children. Could not be around nieces and nephews. Did not like anybody walking down the street in any way that he didn't deem was okay. If, and you know, like people coming with big, like just all of those things. And I remember for the first few years trying to thinking like, okay, well, if he just spends time with children or we walk by schools and we do all of these things, maybe he'll be that dog you see in the movies who's the kid's line, you know, all those things. And I think one day we just realized like we can't change him. Like we really can't change him. There's certain things that he's adapted to over the course of his life, but there's others that he just does on his own terms when he's ready and if. So there's those, the connection thing, not just with the dog and then the interactions that you have with the, you know, the, you always seem to know like dogs' names and you say, you know, like if you're in a dog park, a hello. And those are lovely moments and moments that you wouldn't have normally if you didn't have a dog. But then the empathy thing, also kind of understanding that these are unique beings and not robots, and that just because it's socially acceptable to stand around in a dog park and talk with other humans does not mean that your dog's going to be okay doing that. And so you might have a very different experience of owning a dog than others, you know, reactive dogs, dogs who've been through traumatic experiences. And I think that idea that we can train them to be loving, glorious, sort of like those beautiful golden doodles you see who are just so loving and willing to be with people. And then sometimes you end up with a dog who's a little bit more standoffish. And that's okay. That's who they are.
Yeah, I love that meme with all the, they did an introvert dog meetup at a dog park and all the dogs there were just stood next to their owners. Not one dog was interacting with any other dog or human. And they were all off their they were all off their leashes, but they didn't want to move. They did not want to know. They were not interested. It was just hilarious. And then you go to other dog meetups, you know, and it's just like a giddy frenzy of activity. And then these dogs were just like, take me home. When is it over?
I think it's so helpful too, because it's sort of, I don't know, as and I probably would say it's true for both of you too, like as an empath or as empaths, there can be that, does like the connections happen sometimes without your consent, or you find yourself in situations that maybe aren't ideal for your emotional and spiritual well-being, and seeing that a being next to you is trying very, very strongly to take action to avoid a situation or to change an experience is a wonderful reminder for me that I can also do that too. Like, I don't have to endure because it's a difficult situation. So yeah, kind of, yeah, it's helpful on many levels in terms of like the assumed one, when you say the word connection with a dog, might be having connections with other people and dog owners and spending time with them. But it can also mean the opposite, less of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we already kind of touched on the next thing we wanted to talk about. No, maybe we didn't, but resilience and adaptability in the face of adversity and change. And do either of you have an example of how your dog has demonstrated these qualities and impacted your perspective?
Do you know, I'm going to say I definitely felt I covered that in the last answer, because, and even though I'm talking about Bam, who's now in spirit, it links to your point of having to navigate quite difficult situations, because everybody just wanted to say hello. And he wasn't great with kids either. He didn't love them, especially the marshmallow children. You know, when they're about two and they're in their full-on snow outfit and it makes them go square like a marshmallow, and they come in red and blue. And then when they have their little cute hats and mittens and boots, there is no person there anymore. And the first time Bam met one of these, it ran towards him screaming, a marshmallow with arms and legs in the mouth. And he just was so upset. He was like 4 months. And so sometimes we would have mums look at Bam and push their pram chair towards us. And we'd be saying, no, he's not friendly with children. He's not friendly with children. And they'd be like nodding and smiling like he's good. And I would have to get really strict with people. So I can definitely, you know, Bam was, he was reactive in some ways. He was very intuitive in many ways, especially your point of this person is not good for us, mama, we need to go. And so just learning to listen and then have all practice of the different ways to say to people no. That was the biggest learning of adaptability with him. And it's equipped me now with Baz, because a lot of people are obsessed with Fox Red Labs up here, which he isn't even one of those. So it's I have to constantly, again, break people's hearts. No, I'm sorry. He's actually not that. He's a lemon and white pointed or what? And then they're not interested anymore. But Bam was a great way to prep how to say no in so many different ways that different people can understand, in a compassionate way. But more importantly, a lot of the time I'd be walking Bam, our big one, on my own as a woman. And the city we lived in had a quite heavy underbelly of drug culture. So sometimes I found myself in situations that were really not great for me. And Bam being a bit of a target, you know, something interesting. You know, I had two homeless women try and take him off me in the middle of the city. I was with some family, but they weren't from the area. So they just froze. They didn't know what to do. My husband was there, and we had to join in with their trip, if you like. We had to join in with, well, where was this story going for them? They thought it was this other person's dog. And then we'd have to ask them, oh, describe this dog to us. Well, they were describing a whole different color. So then we'd have to join them in their drug trip about, and join them where they were at until we could find clarity with them. And they step back. Oh, this isn't that dog. No, but be safe, ladies. Have a great day. You know, it was really, it was difficult, but we learned some great lessons on adaptability with the general public. That's the banner with the general public. It's humorous, but if we can't laugh about the scary, difficult, deep stuff, I mean, I always do end up laughing about it. So I hope that everyone's okay with that. Because now that I look back at it, I'm like, that was wild. That was wild. We had two very small women try and steal a 76 kilo dog from us. That was never going to happen. He wasn't going to go with them. He was going to sit down and go, no. And then what were they going to do? Yeah. So anyone who has a big dog, a giant breed that's listening, or a very mini, mini dog, because they're also very attractive to people. People come over and wonder, oh my God, the smallest dog I've ever seen. How much does she weigh? Does she wear an outfit? You know, I can imagine you've had that, Joanna.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a constant fear actually of mine, because she's very like attractive in that respect and easy to pick up. And, you know, I've heard lots of stories about dogs going missing and taken and sold. Like, it does terrify me a little bit. But and the same thing you were talking about like little kiddos coming over or anyone really, because yeah, they're kind of a ridiculous looking breed. So everybody's interested and think that they can come and say hi. So I guess the overarching like reminder is that healthy boundaries are not just important for us, but also important for our pets. And because we are in the human experience, we have to help with facilitating those boundaries for our dogs. So because they can't do it. Well, they try, they can in certain ways, but those ways aren't socially accepted. So we have to do it to keep the peace.
Yes, I wanted to go back to not socially acceptable.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to something that Luna does really, really well that I imagine both your pups do it too, because, well, Diego is older gentleman, and by the sounds of it, your dog, Baz, didn't do well as a working dog because of this reason. And they our dog's abilities to be able to be in full acceptable rest, relaxation, without needing permission or feeling guilty. And how have you witnessed that in your own home? And have you been able to bring more of that into your existence because of your pet? Or do you see it as that's a separate activity? I don't need to be doing that. That's what my dog does. Or do you see it as something that you could invite more of into your life? For me, I can say honestly that she's really helped me with it, because I, like I said, I am more of that flighty person, and I feel like I have to make use of every moment, make it productive. And so, especially in the winter, she's really helped me to slow right down. And, you know, there are moments where she's like just looking at me, waiting for me to sit on the couch and put the blanket over me so that she can sit on my lap. And so I've been like, okay, you know what? Let's do it. Let's do it. So I've been learning more and more to give myself those moments, knowing that it's definitely a value to me and of truly a value to her. And like what you were saying about, you know, as your dog gets older, those moments become more and more precious and more you consider them more and more. So like, even though Luna's only three, I know it's awful, but I do know that she's not going to be around forever. And I know I've got a lot of years with her, but yet, you know, I don't want to ever feel like I'm, you know, pushing her to one side and getting on with something else, even though I know I have to do things to function as a human. I can't sleep for 18 hours a day like she does, but I'm trying to kind of balance, okay, is this really vital and important now? Do I need to do this now, or could this wait till later? And so on and so forth. So I'm trying to lean into rest state more and more because I have her around.
Mark, I'd love to hear about what Diego does and now what you, exactly. I just feel like you two are the wisdom keepers for all of us today. Teach us the ways.
Well, it's funny because as you were saying that, I remember when the reason I started exercising was because of Diego when he was a puppy, because we were warned when we got him from people who said, do you know what this breed is like? The breed is the heading dog. And we thought it can't be that bad, but he would eat walls. He would eat floors. Because we thought, like a nice gentle 30-minute walk around the block, great, once, twice a day, perfect. No, he needed to run. And so I started training for a half marathon and he trained with me. So eventually we were up to doing, I think the most he did was 20 kilometers on one practice run. And his whole life he's been like that. Needs to chase the ball for hours. He wanted to keep playing and exercising so much that we couldn't get him back and we couldn't train him to come back. So we used to have a long climbing rope attached to him that was about 15 feet long that he could still run freely with. But at that moment, when it was over, we could just grab it and get him because otherwise it would be hours. And we had that experience so many times. So he really got me up and moving. And it's only been since he's now doing the complete opposite of that, where I'm starting to actually nap in the afternoon because he needs to nap. It's so it's difficult to explain, but he gets this sort of crazy energy going and he just can't sleep. I think it's part of the senility because it happens at night too and he can't sleep. So, but I found if I take a nap in the afternoon, it gives him permission to also take a nap that ends up being 4 hours long, or in the middle of the night when he has an episode of like doggy Alzheimer's and just sitting there with him and petting him, even though he's crying and looking around and not sure what's happening, is just being calm. We'll just be still. Everything's okay. So over the course of his lifetime so far, it's been a very big swing of that pendulum and mirroring for me too. When I needed the motivation to move, he was my running partner. It's so weird for me now to run without him. It feels very sad at times because I'm used to that person. Like he was the thing that kept me going. And then now seeing how much he's embraced the restful lifestyle and permitting myself to do more of that. Because also I'm older, so it works out well.
Yeah, I can relate to everything you're both saying, but especially Luna's snuggle time under the blankets, because Baz, our pointer dog, he doesn't have the Labrador sort of fat layer that I knew with my dogs growing up in my family. He's quite thin-skinned and has quite short hair. I asked my friend to describe his hair and she said, he's very spiky. I said, I think that's a compliment, Baz. So he loves to be wrapped in a blanket because he gets very cold. And so, yeah, I'm also leaning into the snuggly sofa lifestyle where we just have a little rest. I mean, I'm not as good as you, Joanna. I think sometimes I'm like, I could be doing something on my laptop as he's sleeping next to me whilst we're both under the blanket.
Oh, but I do that too.
Okay.
I tell myself it's like rest because I'm got my legs up, but I'm probably like reading. But reading for me, I was like reading is rest for me. I believe that's like a rest practice. Maybe it's not.
Yeah, I think so, because it's a different type of experience. We're so used to screens and stuff now.
If it's on a screen, it's a little more like engaging, right?
Yeah, my experience is the same as both of yours. Leaning into the snuggle hour, it's one of the best times of day.
Yeah, I know, it's good for us, good for the soul.
Mm-hmm. more rest
please.
What about, because this is a big one in the world of yoga, especially in mindfulness meditation, about living in the present moment. Do either of you have an example of how your dog has reminded you or continues to remind you of I guess, living in the present moment.
Well, this happened today because we're just coming out of winter to spring, as I said earlier, as we were catching up before the podcast. And we had a couple of hours today where it was just glorious sunshine streaming down. And it felt like a really one of those days where you just go, oh, what a beautiful day. And I was walking with my husband and my dog on one of our favorite woodland walks around where we live. And me and my husband were talking about something a bit more serious to do with just how he's feeling in his job right now. And Baz, he's got quite a far range, would you say? He doesn't walk next to you. He does like a big circle around you if you're walking. And that took quite a while for me to get comfortable with because it's further than a spaniel would go, but it's not as far as maybe, I mean, maybe it is. It is quite far, but he's happy. And I just saw him ahead of me and he'd done a little 180 spin and he was running towards us and he had like the happiest look on his face. Like, isn't it such a warm, beautiful day? And it just snapped me and my husband out of this conversation because really we were supposed to be taking a break, having this walk, but we were talking about work for him. And we just looked up and we went, wow, what a day. And it was Baz's communication that really made us go and pay attention and be mindful and present. So that for me is the constant, like, beautiful things that dogs do for us. Just snap us out of the stuff that doesn't matter for a minute and take us to the experience we're having.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. Luna does it in that same way too. But also what I adore is the moment when she's kind of pending for Kyle to get home from work, you know, like we talked about them knowing time. So like 7 p.m. is usually his roughly when he gets home. So she's either watching the staircase for him to come down. Yeah, you come down the stairs into the house, or she's like, she's just on high alert basically for like half an hour up to him coming home. And then that moment when she hears like the door or the keys, it's just like she can't contain herself, the excitement. And there's no, like, you know, with dogs, they don't try and hide how they're feeling ever. There's no, they're not, they are completely themselves. And so just to see her in that pure, like, giddy state of like uncontrollable, like, do I cry? Do I jump? Do I run around? Like, what to do? Do I run up the stairs? Do I run in my little house? Like, it's just seeing that, like, full expression of being unapologetically herself and truly, like, embracing the joy of, like, her person coming home is just, like, oh, it makes me want to do it too, because I feel that way when he comes home as well, but I don't express it like she does. It's a lot more like pared down and played back. But really, I'm like, yeah, I feel like that too. Like, everyone's home. Like, let's get excited. Let's have a dance party. But as humans, and I don't know, as we get older, we just, maybe as a kid, I probably did that more. You know, if a parent came home or something. But now we're like, hi, how was your day? Have a little kiss or a moment in the kitchen. But it's very, like, mellow. But I just love her expression of full joy. And that's a great reminder. Let's do more of that.
So I couldn't put it any better, because it's the exact same thing, like that. The way that they greet that person coming through the door, whereas I normally might just be like you said, like, oh, hey, great, you're back. But then, like, when he's doing that, I'm like, oh, look, he's back. You're so excited. And then it pulls me out of whatever I was thinking was the most important thing, to be present with the people in the space, the beings in the space with me. So it's like, I feel that energy, even though I might not have access to it myself or permit myself to feel it, I feel it through Diego. And then I'm in that moment. And then we're all three of us connecting, as opposed to just the two of them. Like, it's such a nice way to be pulled into something. Yeah.
Oh, yes. You worded that so well. Again,
No.
So good.
I have a funny question. Well, no, it's not really funny, but you know how they always say that dogs look like their owners, or sometimes dogs look like their owners. And you see, and you can see it sometimes, like you're like, wow, you're twins almost. But they also tend to mirror, like our dogs can mirror our behavior, and they're pretty good mirrors for reflecting our own selves back to ourselves. So how do you use what your dog is reflecting back about you to continue growing and evolving as a person?
It's a hard question. So I'm interested to know where you're going to go.
Well, for me, so what I experience in myself is anxiety and stress, I can sometimes see reflected in Diego's behavior. And seeing that have that impact on somebody else either forces me to change what's happening in that moment to, in order, because it taps into that sort of empath part where I don't want him to be experiencing that just because that's happening in my experience of the world. So seeing how like the subtle changes that I experience every day can have a ripple effect and affect him in a negative way generally makes me very aware, first of all, that probably is affecting more people that I'm encountering through my day. They're maybe just hiding it quite well, but also that when I pull myself out of my experience and I focus on changing him, it has this sort of co-beneficial effect of then changing my state. So seeing, I do see a lot of myself reflected in him. And then that allows me to make changes as needed for the betterment of the environment that we're in. So yeah, because it's happened too many times to be a coincidence where, you know, I'm having it, or sometimes we watch a TV show and it's a stressful moment of the TV show. And that's, you can feel Diego's barking at us. His energy is so high, and it's sort of like, we're getting stressed because of the TV show. And then he's adding in this barking at that moment in time. And it's just, he really does pick up on it. So it's, he's a great mirror for me to continue not getting better, but to continue making choices that are hopefully healthier.
Mm. So as in terms of the reflective qualities of the inner landscape, if we go to the reflective qualities of the outer person, who does he look like? You or Juan?
I don't know. I would say probably Juan, because they have these beautiful eyes, both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And good eyebrows too. You have beautiful eyebrows, Mark.
No, but not strong, like strong, expressive.
Yeah, dark. Yeah. 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 Beautiful. Yeah.
And they both dance well. So.
Yeah. Joanna, how about you?
Yeah, I'm struggling with this one. I know that like she is a mirror for sure. But I'm trying to think of like which particular reflection has helped me grow the most. I would say like I think it's patience, but then see, this is the thing. So I feel like she's teaching me to be more patient, but I don't think she is a patient dog. So I don't think that's the mirror, because she's not patient in lots of ways. Like she, you know, if it's a meal time, she's going to let me know. If we're going out, she's going to let me know. If she wants to bark, she's going to bark. Like there's no pause for reflection, or like, I'm just going to take a minute to chill and decide. It's like, this is what's happening. But then that then makes me have to practice patience because I have created these routines for her and now she's regular to them and I'm now resisting them. So, yeah, the practice is patience. And maybe then in turn, if I am practicing it more, it will then eventually be reflected more in her as time goes on. Maybe I'm not practicing it enough, which is why it's reflecting in her as being like, you know, she's a little shorter or she wants things done a bit quicker because I know I have those qualities. So maybe that's just an evolving lesson that we're going to learn and hone the skill together.
And then does she look like you or your partner?
Well, it's hilarious because me and Kyle's 6'5" and I'm quite tall, like I'm 5'7", so I'm tallish. So when we walk her, it's just the, you know, the shortest dog that probably exists. And then the tallest, it's pretty adorable. So she's long this way and we're long this way, which is kind of fun. But facially, I don't know. She's got deep brown eyes like Kyle, but she's long in the face. Like I'm quite long in the face. So maybe to be decided. I don't know. I mean, when I look at her, I see myself. I do. I see myself. Like I remember the moment we got her, I locked eyes with her and I was like, this is it. Like you're my dog. I see like myself in your eyes. Like I see, I know it's so corny, but I was like, I see the universe like in your eyes. Like that's it. It's done. And then I was like, Kyle, you need to like hear all the rest of the information because I'm tuned in now. There's nothing else. So yeah, I don't know. I want to say she looks like me.
If I haven't met your partner in person, so I haven't met his qualities and his energy, but I've obviously been in the same space as you, Joanna, and I think she looks like you.
Yay!
She's your gal. Yeah.
Yes, she's my gal.
Yeah. So our dogs, Bam and Baz, they've both been of the warm redheaded variety, which is very succinct with my partner. He has a very warm, glowy skin and his beard has some lovely warm hairs in there. And his mum was a strawberry blonde. So we've called them the ginger ninjas because they are incredibly flexible with where they place their legs over their heads. And yeah. So that's a funny thing. So I don't think they look at anything like me, either dogs. I don't see that. Mirror wise, I think for me, it comes back to, I can tell, they tell me when I'm not trusting in things or if I'm resisting things or if I'm trying to hold something that shouldn't be held. It's not mine to hold, or it's a plan that I'm trying to shape and actually I've just got to let it go and it's going to shape itself. They act up when I'm trying to contain something. And I think by me doing that, it probably makes me maybe anxious, stiff, rigid, and that's not the way they know me. So then they start acting up and Baz goes off and tries to steal a towel or any textile he can get. And so I know, okay, something's going on here for me. He's reacting from that. And yeah. But funnily enough, if I just chuck a blanket on him, he just goes to sleep. So sometimes if I'm in a situation where I've got to get through these feelings or I've got to take my time to go through it right now, and he's like, I don't like how you're acting, Mama, I'll just be like, come on, sofa Baz. I'll throw a blanket on him. And then he's like, bye. Snooze town for the rest of the day. Oh, I have my techniques that I can use to buy myself a bit more time. I've never had a dog that likes a blanket because all my doggies before have been triple coats or Labradors that have, you know, they've had their little layer of fat and they're very toasty all the time. So this is a new one for me. The blanket is a great tip.
Yeah, I think we all have our tips of like how to calm them, or like, you know, knowing where we can put them in the house and they'll stay if they're occupied with, you know, toy. Or for Luna, it's the space heater. Like if that's on, that's where she'll be. So it's good to have those little.
It's like comforting for them, isn't it?
Yeah, like they're soothing. Yeah, they're soothing spaces. Yeah. Right. Well, that was pretty cool. I loved that chat. Thank you all for sharing about your beautiful pups and your stories. It was so insightful. And I know that a lot of students that listen, that have dogs or pets in general, will probably be able to connect with what we've been talking about today. So thank you for your time and for sharing your wisdom and your pup's wisdom with us.
Thank you for hosting this.
Yeah, of course. And if anyone has any comments, you'll be able to post them to us either on the Your Yoga Flow Studio, or you can email us if you want to know any more about our pets. We'd be happy to give you a bit more info and talk to your ear off about them and send you a million photos of them. But if this was enough, then this was enough. Thank you all very much. And until next time, have a wonderful rest of your day.